There's a lot of division in our nation, and some of it revolves around race. It would be helpful, though, if we all realize that every human being is a part of the human race. Moreover, my life and your life have value, not because of our race, ethnicity, social status, wealth, looks, or ability. Our lives have value because each one of us is created in the image of God. If we all realize this, we can value and respect each other despite our differences.
Welcome to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center. And now for today's message, here's Associate Pastor Brian Longworth.
Today we're continuing our critical race theory sermon series. And today we're going to ask the question, does systemic racism exist in America? Is the system rigged against Black Americans? And one thing we will do today is we will look at examples of systemic racism in the past, and even some elements that may still hold true to today. But we're also going to show that many of the negative impacts of the policies of the past have been changed and rectified. One of the things that you know, when we look at systemic racism, we're told today, and in fact, Democrat politicians have said that some of the voting rights laws of Georgia are actually worse than the Jim Crow laws. And the problem with saying something like that is that people that didn't live through the Jim Crow era might actually believe you, might actually believe that that's true. Of course, it's not true. We know that in the Jim Crow era, there was separate but equal schools, quote unquote, separate but equal. Whites weren't allowed to, or Blacks weren't allowed to go to the schools where whites went to. And we know that it really wasn't equal in many cases. Blacks were required to ride in the back of the bus. They weren't allowed to eat in the same restaurant. They even, if they went into a restaurant that was a white-only restaurant, they actually couldn't order. They weren't able to drink from the same water fountain. They were, in fact, treated like second-class citizens. How does requiring someone to bring their voter ID equate to worse than that, to vote? I mean, that's ridiculous. If laws that require voter ID to vote are racist, then laws that require a voter or an ID to buy alcohol are also racist. I mean, people aren't making that argument. And it's just totally ridiculous and totally untrue and really something that we need to actually look at the truth. And that's one thing that we've looked at. Jesus said in John chapter 8, verses 31 to 32, if you abide in my word, you'll be my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. So this is important that we actually live in the word of God, that we're developing a biblical worldview, that we look at the world through the lens of the Bible. And when we're looking at whether it's information about what the Bible says, what we believe about the Bible, or it's information about some event that we don't have firsthand knowledge of, either in the world today or in the world in the past, it's important that we realize that there are some who know the truth but suppress the truth in unrighteousness. You can read about that in Romans chapter 1. Of course, people do that to put down the gospel. But we also know that this actually happens for where people are pushing an agenda and facts that contradict their agenda. They just don't don't mention those. Now, we're going to look at some of the things that have happened in the past that are examples to some extent of systemic racism. Now, we know that after slavery, and by the way, when we look at slavery, you can't even really say that slavery was racist, as we have discussed and have actually shown in past sermons. And you can go to our church website, covenanttabernacle.com, our church Facebook page, Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center, and also our church YouTube channel, Covenant Tabernacle. And you can see and hear some of those past sermons where we have shown that actually a large percentage of the free blacks in the South actually owned slaves. So blacks owned black slaves. There were also Indians. In fact, slavery existed before Columbus discovered America, before the first settlers came here. Slavery already existed. Indians owned slaves. They owned Indian slaves. And the Indians would own whites as slaves. They would own blacks as slaves. There were whites that were owned as slaves. So slavery in itself was not totally racist. We also see one of the big symbols of oppression of the black race is lynching. And of course, lynching is horrible no matter what race the victim is. And it certainly was used to put down the black race after slavery was over. But as we mentioned from Thomas Sowell's book, Black Rednecks and White Liberals, by the way, it's a great book to read, he goes into so many different areas and shows how the bad behavior, the negative behaviors of the slave owners actually were transferred over to the slaves and still exist in certain sectors of the inner city today. But as Thomas Sowell mentioned, lynching had been, whites had been the victims of lynching for over 100 years before slavery ended. But when slavery ended, we know that there was a huge push for lynching blacks to actually keep them down. Now, we just recently, this last election cycle in the state of Florida, Floridians actually passed a constitutional amendment requiring minimum wage laws the minimum wage would actually be raised over time up to $15 an hour. And this is now a constitutional amendment. Well, I opposed that amendment. And the reason I did is the reason I oppose all whether it's a law or a constitutional amendment of a minimum wage, it does discriminate. It discriminates against poor. It discriminates against those who are unskilled. And you may not know this, you may or may not know this, but the first minimum wage law to prevent was actually enacted to prevent blacks from competing with whites for jobs. Before 1938, this is from African American talk show host and just recently a gubernatorial candidate in California, Larry Elder. Before 1938, when the first federal minimum wage law was enacted, a black teenager was more likely to be employed than a white teenager. Why? Because the black teenager was willing to work for less. And because he was willing to work for less, or she was willing to work for less, then the employer would be more willing to hire, even in an age, in a period of time where there was vast discrimination. The black teenager was more likely to be employed than a white teenager. Now, what does that do for someone who is who is black. Well, it gives them skills. It gives them those job skills, the necessary, you know, think about your first job. You probably didn't know very much, but you learned. You might have learned how to work hard. I remember my first real job was a busboy. I learned how to work really hard, how to work quickly, how to do a job well. And I didn't make much money, but I gained skills that I was able to carry with me toward a better job in the future. And that's what actually used to happen before the federal minimum wage law. But what happened was with prejudice existing and the wages requiring, you know, you think, and this is what the people that support the minimum wage laws will say, is that this is actually to help out the poor. It's actually to help out those who are minorities so that they can receive more money. Really, what happens is if there is prejudice, and there was in 1938, there was prejudice in certain parts of this country. When there is prejudice, someone who is prejudiced against blacks will be less likely to hire them when he has to pay the same amount of money for a white person. So the very foundation of this minimum wage law was actually to suppress blacks and to keep blacks down. And that was bad. Now, one of the interesting things that I learned from Thomas Sowell's book, Black Liberals and White Rednecks, is that with education, political correctness has been with us since even the time of slavery and the time when slaves were emancipated. You see, the first blacks that went to college after slavery ended, it was thought that it would be improper for them to have a white professor because they would look down upon that because they would have to be learning from a white professor. So the slaves that went to school and went to college, the former slaves that went to college, they actually had black professors. What was the problem there? Well, the black professors had never been to college either. So you had this policy really kept back blacks and really, really kept them down to a point where it took them longer to actually catch up to whites who had actually been educated. Of course, we know also that the attitude of education among even whites in the South made a huge impact on whites, and even a bigger impact than this policy among blacks. As in, even during the world, it was either the First or Second World War that actually whites from the South scored lower on SATs than blacks from the North did. And that's because of the view of education, the negative view of education that whites in the South had from their redneck predecessors. And by the way, one of the things that we learned from that book, Black Rednecks and White Liberals, is that the rednecks, the slave owners, were called rednecks before they came to America. But Larry Elder pointed out in a speech that he actually gave a speech in front of a largely white audience, and he said he noticed there was a large black man in the back, standing in the back with his arms crossed, and he would frown when Larry Elder would make a point, and that Larry thought was a good point. And afterward, the man came up and spoke to Larry and said, "I'm angry." He said, "I'm not angry with you, though. I'm angry at myself, because many of the things that I've heard, many of the things that I've believed, I know now to be untrue." But one of the things that he mentioned in that speech is that according to a 2004 Thomas B. Fordham Institute study, 44% of Philadelphia public school teachers send their own kids, school-age kids, to private school. Yet the Democrat Party adamantly opposes school vouchers, which would give K through 12 children in urban parents a chance at a better school. He did not know, talking about this man that was at this meeting, that Democrats, including President Barack Obama, tried to end the Washington, D.C. Opportunity Scholarship Program. It's a lottery that allows fortunate parents to opt out of their public school for a better private education. The program is so popular that there are far more parents who want to participate than there are positions to fill. So this is something that, you know, you had the separate but equal, which wasn't equal. You had the black students in colleges can't have white professors, even though no black professors have ever been to college. You had that discrimination, but you still have kids today, black kids today, and people of other races as well, that are trapped in failing schools because of policies that require those students to go to those public schools. You know, it would be much more efficient if every parent just had a certain amount of money that they could spend each year on education. If they wanted to homeschool, they could spend that money for homeschooling. If they wanted to send their kid to a private school, they could do that. But in this way, we do still see some discrimination still happening, where many white families are able to send their kids to private schools. The teachers are able to send their kids to private schools, but those who are poor can't send their kids to private schools because of this policy. So that's something that we need to actually work on. Now, we talked about the Jim Crow laws. One of the things that you may or may not know, is that Jim Crow laws were actually passed by Democrats. And of course, we know that Ku Klux Klan was actually put into place to actually suppress blacks. The Ku Klux Klan, many of their founders, they were founded actually by the Democrat Party. And even as recently as when I was a child, and even a young man, we have had Democrat senators and who actually have participated and were members of the Klan, including Robert Byrd, who actually was a recruiter for the Klan. Al Gore's father was a member of the Klan. These types of things are something that you don't know. A lot of times, you know, we hear about the Civil Rights Act and the Voter Rights Act, Voting Rights Act, and we think, well, you know, that was passed by Democrats. Well, actually, a larger percentage of Republicans voted for those bills as well. Now, this is not to say that everything the Republican Party does is good and everything the Democrat Party does is bad, but you need to know the truth and you need to know the facts. One of the things that we hear today is that the police are racist. And we've gone over this, in the last few years several times, but that the stats just do not show this to be true. Cops kill nearly twice as many whites as blacks in 2015. According to data compiled by the Washington Post, 50% of the victims of fatal police shootings were white, while 26% were black. The majority of these victims had a gun or were armed or otherwise threatening the officer with potential lethal force, according to Heather McDonald in a speech at Hillsdale College. More whites and Hispanics die from police homicide than blacks. According to McDonald, 12% of white and Hispanic homicide deaths were due to police officers, while only 4% of black homicide deaths were the result of police officers. One of the things that you see is that there's a huge percentage of crime and actually murders that happen in the inner city that are black on black crime. And it's something that we need to address. Another issue, and one of the things that Milwaukee County, former Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark said, is that if black lives really mattered, the protesters would be outside of abortion clinics. Because here's the deal. In Alabama, 58% of their abortions were on black babies. While in Georgia, they reported 52.1% on blacks. In Tennessee, performed 49.9% of their abortions on blacks. In Virginia, 43.9% on black women. Michigan, black abortion percentage was 47.9%. New York City alone, they performed 46.1% of their abortions on black women, and 41.1% of black abortions were reported in Missouri. And Black Planned Parenthood, from their founding, was founded by a racist and a eugenicist. And even in the Republican White House, see, we're going to talk about the bad that Republicans have done as well. The Nixon White House, there are actually audio tapes where they were discussing what they can do to suppress the blacks, and one of the solutions was abortion. And abortion has wiped out a huge percentage, so much so that of the African Americans, they aren't even having enough children to sustain their population. Today, minority women, blacks constitute 13% of the female population in the United States, but underwent 36% of all abortions, approximately 432% of preborn children are killed by abortion each year. So this is something that we need to fight to protect innocent human life. Regardless of the race, we need to make sure that every human being is protected. Now, the biggest problem with critical race theory, in my opinion, is that some people actually believe it. One of the things that Larry Elder, one of the stories Larry Elder tells about, is a white counselor that was counseling black criminals. And these criminals were all poor. They didn't have much. And the white counselor was successful. They all thought he was successful because he was white, not because he worked hard, not because he went to school, he got a degree, and he was effective in what he did. They thought that they were doomed because of their skin color. They thought they actually couldn't accomplish much because of their skin color. One thing that actually shows that this is not true, though, is the success of Nigerian immigrants. Nigerian, most people that come here from Nigeria actually have dark skin. Now, by the way, one of the things you'll see, we're told that we are systemically racist in this country, yet currently there are thousands of people trying to break into this country, people of color. Would they be coming here if we were a systemic racist country? Would Nigerians voluntarily attempt to come here if we were systemically racist? In Nigeria, 61% of Nigerians over the age of 25 holds a graduate degree, compared to 32% of the U.S. born population. The Nigerians actually earn more money each year than the average household income. And so if we had this huge systemic racism against blacks, that would not even be possible to happen. Even President Obama said that we're 90% of the way there. One of the things that Larry Elder quotes, he says, do we have racism today? Of course we have racism. He says 8% of the population believes that Elvis is alive. So you can't totally wipe out stupidity and ignorance. We're not going to be able to totally end racism as you see on the backs of some of the football helmets, end racism. It's certainly a laudable goal, but there are certain idiots that are going to continue to be racist. But one thing that we need to do is realize that we are way better off in this country than we were in the past. Wrongs have been righted. People have fought. People even went to jail. Some lost their lives to actually fight on behalf of equality and on behalf of the day when, as Martin Luther King Jr. stated, he longed for the day when his children would be judged not based on their character, not based on their skin color. And that's what we need to look for and to work for in this nation, and to realize that we are all created in God's image. We are all created in His image. We are His image bearers. No matter what color our skin is, we are all, in fact, we all, our ancestry all goes back to Adam and Eve, and all goes back to Noah. Every single one of us, there's no difference even between Jew and Greek. Jesus and the blood of Jesus ended all of that. We need to work for equality, not equity, but equality. And there is a difference, but we need to work for a time where we can actually achieve much. And we need to let everyone of every race know that you can achieve, you can accomplish much, you can be great, you can do great things because you live in this country, you live in this nation where productivity is rewarded, where success is rewarded, where you are able to actually achieve and to earn money based on what you are able to accomplish. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make His face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace.
You've been listening to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Join us each Sunday morning for The Lighthouse. If you've been blessed by this broadcast, visit www.covenanttabernacle.com where you can give us feedback and make a donation.
There's a lot of division in our nation, and some of it revolves around race. It would be helpful, though, if we all realize that every human being is a part of the human race. Moreover, my life and your life have value, not because of our race, ethnicity, social status, wealth, looks, or ability. Our lives have value because each one of us is created in the image of God. If we all realize this, we can value and respect each other despite our differences.
Consider how He loves you, His arms of love enfold you like a sweet perfume. He left His word to guide us. His presence lives inside us like a sweet.